VoiceAmericaVariety.com. There is no greater community builder than adoption. Welcome to Your Adoption Coach with host Kelly Ellison. If you are starting an adoption or just thinking about it, or maybe someone you know is going through an adoption and you want to help, please stay tuned over the next hour as we will educate and inspire you with some real stories and information about resources that can help. Now, here is your host, Kelly Ellison.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome everyone to our show today. I'm Kelly Ellison, your adoption coach. And you know, the purpose of this show is to inspire and educate you all about adoption. As a relatively new show, we've been airing every Saturday since June 2nd. And I hope that you've been staying with us. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the show live, you know you can always go to the VoiceAmerica.com variety channel and download our shows. But in June and July, we had 20,000 listeners, and so we're really thrilled with the response and all of our listeners out there. So I want to just say thank you to everyone who is listening to the show and tuning in. And if you know of anyone who is interested in adoption or just wants to hear some really inspiring stories about adoption, please do give them our information. You know, last week we had a great show. Tom DiFilippo, CEO and President for the Joint Council, who has been an advocate for children and elevating the cause for every child to have a permanent family. Tom was with us. And if you heard the show, you heard right out of the gate that every time I talk to a new guest, I will ask them about their passion. And Tom shared a very personal story with us about how he had worked in the corporate sector for a number of years, and he happened to be over in Russia, and this was a beverage company, I guess, and they were celebrating this beverage and reaching a certain number of sales. And he had the opportunity to visit a Russian orphanage. And that changed his life. And he realized that he needed to spend his hours and his expertise working on behalf of children. And I certainly don't do it justice, but Tom told a very touching story about how he really turned his life around and started to work on behalf of children. The work of the Joint Council has taken him to over 28 countries. We talked about the three indicators to a child's well-being. Those are freedom from abuse, nutrition, and a family. And the work of the Joint Council and their mission is to advance the overall well-being of vulnerable children and their right to live in permanent family care. Several initiatives that they're working on include the National Action Plan for Children in Adversity. This is a new initiative of the U.S. government. They've also joined efforts to help save the adoption tax credit and to keep it in place. And a really fun thing that we talked about, a way to raise money, is to check out their website at makechangeforchildren.org. During Halloween, the children can go around and collect change, and they're up to $71,000 that they've collected to reach their goal of $100,000. So the Joint Council, www.jointcouncil.org. If you don't know about them, you should. They do some really, really great work around international and domestic children's issues and adoption. So we get to begin our show today with our friend and sponsor, Amanda Grant with U.S. Adopt. We're just so grateful for Amanda. She not only helps to make this show possible, but if you recall, Amanda is an adoption professional. She's the CEO and founder of U.S. Adopt. She's an adoptive parent herself, and while working full-time in a demanding career as a senior officer in the institutional investment business, Amanda went through the domestic adoption process, and she experienced the many challenges and pressures that people encounter when they decide to build a family through adoption. Based on several years of her research and personal experience, she developed the adoption education tools to guide people through the process more quickly and confidently, while also reducing risk and costs. These tools that were formed were the basis, actually, of the U.S. Adopt Company. Amanda is also certified in adoption from Rutgers. So, Amanda, welcome back. It's like having an old friend on the show again.
Thank you, Kelly. Great to be with you again.
Yeah. And if I haven't said thank you to you enough, I just know how much we appreciate it. You know, the sponsors that we have for this show really make the show possible. So to you, U.S. Adopt, to Beacon House Adoptions, and also to America's Christian Credit Union, we're deeply grateful for you guys allowing us to get on this show and talk about our most favorite subject.
My pleasure.
Adoption. So I want to first give a call out to Isaac. Isn't it his birthday today, October 6th?
Oh, it is. Actually, yep, it is. He's 3 years old.
Yes. Well, congratulations to Isaac. We want to say happy birthday to him. I know my daughter, we just celebrated her 6th birthday. And, you know, don't all parents say this? It went fast. It's going by
does.
Very quick. So today, Amanda, we're going to talk about openness in adoption. And you're a really great person to talk about this because your adoption with Isaac was an open adoption. And so maybe you can tell our listeners, what does it mean when we say an adoption is open, kind of from your experience?
Sure. Well, everyone's experience is a little bit different, and there's a great fear factor around the words open adoption for people who haven't been exposed to it yet or learned about it or had experience with it. And really, there is nothing to fear. In fact, it can be an incredibly rewarding experience, and it is for most of the people that embrace and engage in an open adoption. In general terms, open adoption refers to some kind of communication between birth families and adoptive families, and that it's a very broad spectrum, though. It can range from prior to placement, the birth family being able to select the adoptive family, all the way through various kinds and frequencies of communication over the course of the child's life. But importantly, I think we also want to differentiate between the words open adoption and openness in adoption, because mm-hmm. they're often confused. Open adoption really refers to sort of the negotiated relationship between the various parties involved in an adoption, whereas openness in adoption really refers much more to how the adoption will be treated and communicated by the adoptive family and potentially the birth family to the child that has been adopted, and or in an even broader sense to the family's community and to records associated with the adoption. So they are two very different things.
So if a person is going into an adoption agency, any adoption agency that handles the domestic adoption, do the agencies understand the difference between those two terms?
I think they do, yeah. And primarily when people sign up with an agency, what we're talking about is open adoption. The social workers at agencies now are very involved in counseling adoptive parents and birth families as to degrees of openness. And quite frankly, the majority of agencies are encouraging openness in providing a child with their adoptive history from a very early age to normalize it for them. And mm-hmm. to reduce the secrets around adoption so that children have an opportunity to be comfortable discussing their adoption and discussing it with their adoptive parents as well as their birth parents if they are in their lives. There's also politics involved with this, as there is with everything else in the world. So, you know, all over the U.S., there are current very heated debates about providing access to adoption records such as birth certificates, original birth certificates, and that's another aspect of openness.
So when you go into, does open adoption, having an open adoption mean the same thing across the board? Is it standardized agency to agency, or does a person really need to take the time and the rigor to explain what they're looking for specifically?
It's really really a combination of both, Kelly. I mean, in general, it's standard, meaning that open adoption to any agency that offers open adoptions means they are advocates of and providing access to adoptions where there's some form of communication. Beyond that, it's really customized by agency and by the adoptive parents and birth parents' requirements. And it really can vary along a spectrum. There's sort of three general degrees of open adoption that are referred to, and those are closed adoption, semi-open, and open. And the difference between those is closed, which is becoming less and less the norm, refers to an adoption where there's no identifying or non-identifying information exchanged between birth and adoptive families, and really they never communicate, they don't know each other, and there will potentially be very little information to provide to a child as they grow up. Semi-open is typically where non-identifying information is exchanged. So birth and adoptive families, they may meet, but they still may only know each other's first names, for example. They don't know where each other lives. They don't have access to each other's records or details, and all communication is typically through the agency or attorney in that type of a relationship. And then there's open adoption, which really has its own spectrum. Typically, that is where identifying information is exchanged between birth and adoptive families. They almost always meet. The birth family is almost always selecting the adoptive family in this type of a situation, having met them. And then there is some form of negotiated agreement about the intention for certain types of communication to continue through the child's life. But I think it's really important to stress these are not always contractual obligations that can be upheld. In some states, a contract for communication in an open relationship can be legally bound. In others, it's more of a verbal commitment. But no matter what the arrangement, I think people who are considering open adoption should know that what you negotiate at the beginning of the relationship, and what's very typical, just as an example, is we as adoptive parents will commit to sending letters and photos once a year before the child's birthday until the child is 18 or 21. And we will commit to one visit a year with the birth family in an agreed upon neutral place. That's a very typical arrangement for a starting point. But it is only a starting point, no matter what type of open adoption you're in, because open adoptions evolve and devolve over time for various reasons, and the frequency and types of communication can change as trust and comfort build between the families.
Okay, wonderful. Well, one of the things that that we've got to go to a break here, but when we come back, I want to really drill down on how many people fear open adoption, as you had said, and it's really great to be able to kind of blow the myths out of this, because I think that's really important. We have a certain perception of what we think open adoption is. And hopefully today on the show with Amanda, you'll be able to learn some different alternatives to this and how this might be more suitable for you. So stay with us. If you want to get on Amanda's website and take a look at some of the work that she does, you can go to www.usadopt.com, and we hope you'll stay with us.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
Beacon House Adoption Services has been providing services to birth and adopting parents since 1989. We offer experience and professionalism throughout your adoption, whether domestic or international. Licensed in multiple states, Beacon House is Hague accredited through COA, accredited by the Russian Federation for International Adoptions and by the Republic of Moldova. Our domestic adoptions are nationwide. Call 225-753-5551, a 501c3 charitable organization.
America's Christian Credit Union believes every child deserves a forever family. Our adoption loan program has helped over 500 children find a loving home. We understand the adoption process and will work with you to find the financial solution that will be best for your family. Find out about our adoption loans on our website at www.americaschristiancu.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-343-6328. Once again, that's 1-800-343-6328 for an adoption loan with America's Christian Credit Union on approved credit and rates subject to change without notice, federally insured by the NCUA.
If you're considering adoption and feeling overwhelmed, you're not alone. U.S. Adopt can help. We provide domestic adoption consulting services that simplify and shorten your path to parenthood. Our new approach improves and accelerates your results, minimizes expenses, and eliminates costly mistakes. Whether you choose to work with an agency or attorney, to take advantage of our free consultation and learn how we can help you, please call U.S. Adopt at 212-710-2763 or visit www.usadopt.com.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. To connect with Kelly or her guests today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Would you rather send us an email? Please send questions or comments about the show to coach at youradoptioncoachradio.com. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. Good afternoon again. This is Kelly Ellison. I'm your adoption coach. And we're here today with Amanda Grant, who is the president and CEO of U.S. Adopt. Amanda's website is www.usadopt.com. Amanda is not only a sponsor of our radio show and a wonderful friend, but has also a great adoption professional. She's certified in adoption. She has a wonderful set of tools that really help families to reduce the risk and cost and the whole process that you're going through to help guide people through this process more quickly. So we're thrilled to have you. And today we're talking about this topic of openness in adoption. Amanda knows firsthand about this particular subject. And I think one of the reasons why you're so passionate about it, right?
Absolutely.
So we were talking about kind of the three areas. You can either have a closed adoption, a semi-open adoption, and an open adoption. You were really defining those before we went on break. And one of the things I have to go for it here because we all recognize that many people fear adoption. And let's get really clear. The elephant in the room is that if you're doing a domestic adoption, you adopt a child, you have an open adoption, and you are worried that in several years the parents are going to come back or the mom's going to come back or even the dad in that case and say, I want my child back. So that's the elephant in the room. Tell us about that. I know you've got some personal experiences to share, too.
I do. Well, let me start by saying it's absolutely not true. And the reason people have this fear, I believe, and perceive that there is this risk of the birth family coming back to reclaim their child is, one, because they just don't understand open adoption and how it works, but two, unfortunately, the press tends to share negative stories. And when they even share those stories, they are incomplete and do not include a lot of information, and so people only get snippets of why unfortunate incidents occur, which occur rarely. So much more important, I think, is to help people understand how this really works and why not to fear it, but to embrace it.
Right.
You know, a couple big items first. I think the biggest misperception is that they're afraid that having an open adoption means co-parenting with the birth family, but actually what it means is co-loving. Birth parents make a decision to participate in an open adoption with as much forethought and consideration as we as adoptive parents go into this, if not more so, because they're the ones choosing to make an adoption plan for their child. And they have no desire or need to co-parent. They are certainly going to feel sadness and they're going to grieve their decision as anybody naturally would, even if they think it's the right one. But really what's important to the majority of these birth parents is to know that their child is loved and safe and being raised in a good way. And so being part of an open adoption, whether they get photos or letters or emails or a call once a year, enables them to move forward with their own lives, and it reaffirms for them the decision that they have made. Mm-hmm. The other really important thing for people to know is that once an adoption is finalized, it is irrevocable. And so someone can't come back and reclaim their child.
Now, let me qualify this by saying that you do have to do your due diligence on the front end of this. In other words, identifying the birth father and the birth mother. But aren't there also papers to be signed if you cannot find the birth father? I mean, you do need to have some rigor, and
Absolutely.
Your agency will help you with that process and making sure all the...
I'll take a leap here and share some very personal information,
which is in
my son's situation. His birth father did not come to the forefront with his birth mother to make this decision. He was not in the picture. He could not be identified by last name, which meant he couldn't be searched for legally to be notified. And so what happened in our case, being that we reside in New Jersey, is that we were able to go to court 4 months after placement and terminate the birth father's rights legally.
Okay.
And it varies state by state, but you're right. That's a big part, though, of what an agency or an attorney should be doing with people if they're doing things right, is finding out everything they can and working through whatever that particular situation is with the birth father's present or not present.
So tell us about your relationship. You have an open adoption with Isaac's mom. Tell us about, you told us before about the story. We probably have some new listeners, but the story about when you met her for the first time, you know, and then also didn't you mention you got some communication from her?
I did, and I'd love to share that.
So. Yeah.
You know, I came into the adoption process, like many other people, with fears until I became educated about open adoption and, in fact, worked with an agency that only provides open adoptions. I was selected by my son's birth mother. We met when she was about 7.5 months pregnant, which was the most surreal meeting I've ever been to in my life. But in some strange way, and I think you hear this from most people that have this type of experience, even though you are two very different people, one coming to this meeting in crisis and with a particular need, and another one coming full of hope and with a particular desire, you somehow find a way to connect with each other, and you do. And it might be in ways that you just can't imagine, and that's what happened with us. We did connect, and we decided to move forward. And initially, my agreement with his birth mother was for a very conservative amount of communication. It was, as I've said, photos and letters and an annual meeting. As it turned out, she wasn't ready for the first meeting until he was about 18 months old. We then got together. And we were both very nervous, I think, but it was the most joyous occasion I could ever have imagined. And she said to me at that first get-together, seeing how much he loves you and how attached to you he is only affirms for me that I made the right decision. We only knew first names. We didn't know where each other lived. We have since seen each other every 3 or 4 months my son, and also with an older sibling of his who she continues to raise. And so our relationship and our trust has built over time. We have shared more identifying information as time goes on. But as a great example, and I'm not the only one who has experiences like this, but it's real and it's recent, I sent an annual letter to her with some photos because his birthday is coming up, and reminded her that I not only celebrate him, but her and her courageous decision, and let her know how glad I am she's part of our family. And I received a text, which I'm going to share with you, just 3 days ago, which says, "Hi, Amanda and Isaac. I love the pictures. They're awesome. And I'm so happy with my decision because I know he's well taken care of with a wonderful mother. And me and his sister are very grateful for all that you have done and are happy to be a part of your family."
Oh, that's wonderful. That's just wonderful.
And that's
wonderful.
Very real. And that is
real.
What open adoption is about. She does not have any regrets, nor do many of the other birth mothers, most of the birth mothers that I've ever met. You know, there's always clearly a sadness that they haven't been able to keep the child, but they're so liberated to move forward with their plans and their lives and the reason they made this decision in the first place.
Right. And I will just share with you that the flip side of an international adoption is that that's missing. That's really missing. And a birthday does not go by for Maya that I don't think about her mother, that I don't think about this woman who was forced or for whatever circumstances to leave her child behind. And, you know, there have been some success stories of people actually going back to China or whatever their countries are and being able to ask questions and do a search and actually find birth families. But that is a place in at least the international world of adoption that is something that you just – it's a sadness. I just have to say it's a sadness that you kind of carry with you all the time. There's not a birthday that goes by for Maya or a Christmas or something that in the back of my mind, we don't think about her mom. Sure. So it's so great that you have this experience with Isaac's mom and now a sibling. And, you know, it's just a really, really wonderful experience. And so also I want to just acknowledge you for taking all of the knowledge and experience that you have and really channeling that into the work that you do with US Adopt, because I know that this is a passion for you.
And
clearly. And so, you know, one question that I would ask if I'm out there kind of looking around and I'm thinking about doing an open adoption, you made mention that some agencies don't do open adoption. So this is one of those pre-list things that you need to be looking at,
yeah.
Right, in terms of
yeah.
asking agencies if they do open adoptions or if they don't. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And people will find that more and more agencies are focusing on open adoptions, but there are mm-hmm. still quite a few that offer closed adoptions. And if that's something that you are choosing, you definitely want to make sure that you've identified that as their offering before you sign up with them.
Okay. And now, so talk to me a little bit about, so you have this open adoption, you have this relationship with Isaac's mom. At what point, talk to me about the security and the privacy of your life with Isaac. At what level do you still feel like there's a security and privacy around your little bubble with Isaac?
Absolutely. And every family really creates the security that they need from the starting point because open adoptions start at a very conservative point. And the most minimal amount of identifying information is shared and communication will go through the attorney or agency. There really is no risk. Now, if an adoptive family starts posting photos all over Facebook, for example, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's something important to think about with the prevalence of social media and using it to share with our communities and our friends and families. People have to keep in mind that birth families often have access to those same resources. And so if you're trying to really keep your family private, you need to think about that in how
right.
you share information. But when you're setting up these relationships, it's really the adoptive family's choice to what extent they want to provide access to the adoptive family, and that can be as limited or as unlimited as they choose to have it. And so if they're only sharing first names and all communication is through the agency or attorney, there's really almost no risk.
Okay. But it depends. So, for example, your experience with Isaac's mom, you've had this experience where it started out at a small level, pictures every year, that uh-huh. kind of thing, too. Now, as you said, you're seeing her more often. You're starting to build a more long-term relationship with her.
Right. But that's at our mutual agreement to sort of peel back the onion one layer at a
uh-huh.
time. And
uh-huh.
You know, that is my choice because as I have built trust with her and she with me and I've gotten more and more comfortable and have no concerns that she's, you know, interested in trying to be a bigger part of his life. She has her own life.
Right.
She and her daughter, and she has her own goals and community. And, you know, I think the best way to think about the relationship is sort of like either in-laws or a cousin mm-hmm. in the family. I mean, that's sort of how it feels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But people can really open that relationship up as little or as much as they want to over time, but you don't do it until you're comfortable with it, and that's why it takes time, and that's right. Where the security comes from. So even though she and I, for example, have exchanged more personal information, I have never in my life felt any concern, nor do I think she has.
Right. That's great. That's great.
But, well, you know, Amanda, it's so. And I just add one caveat, Kelly, really quickly, which is,
Nothing
in the world is perfect, and there are rare occasions where relationships might become uncomfortable and they need to be renegotiated.
Yes, yes. I was gonna ask you about that. We're gonna go on break. I wanna talk a little bit more about that. We're gonna talk about how open adoptions are negotiated and, you know, what happens when you get down that road and you wanna decide that you wanna turn back a little bit. So again, we're with Amanda Grant of usadopt.com is the website. We're talking about openness in adoption today, and we hope you'll stay with us.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Beacon House Adoption Services has been providing services to birth and adopting parents since 1989. We offer experience and professionalism throughout your adoption, whether domestic or international. Licensed in multiple states, Beacon House is Hague accredited through COA, accredited by the Russian Federation for International Adoptions and by the Republic of Moldova. Our domestic adoptions are nationwide. Call 225-753-5551, a 501c3 charitable organization.
America's Christian Credit Union believes every child deserves a forever family. Our adoption loan program has helped over 500 children find a loving home. We understand the adoption process and will work with you to find the financial solution that will be best for your family. Find out about our adoption loans on our website at www.americaschristiancu.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-343-6328. Once again, that's 1-800-343-6328 for an adoption loan with America's Christian Credit Union on approved credit and rates subject to change without notice, federally insured by the NCUA.
If you're considering adoption and feeling overwhelmed, you're not alone. U.S. Adopt can help. We provide domestic adoption consulting services that simplify and shorten your path to parenthood. Our new approach improves and accelerates your results, minimizes expenses, and eliminates costly mistakes. Whether you choose to work with an agency or attorney, to take advantage of our free consultation and learn how we can help you, please call U.S. Adopt at 212-710-2763 or visit www.usadopt.com.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. To connect with Kelly or her guests today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Would you rather send us an email? Please send questions or comments about the show to coach@youradoptioncoachradio.com. Now, back to the show.
Thanks for staying with us. Good afternoon. I'm Kelly Ellison, your adoption coach, and I'm here today with Amanda Grant. Our topic is openness in adoption. Amanda is the CEO and president of US Adopt. The website is usadopt.com if you're interested in going in and finding out some more information about Amanda's work. I do want to make a special announcement, though, before we get back into the content of the show. I want to be sure to have everyone mark your calendars. November 17th is the National Adoption Day. And we're going to be featuring Wendy's Wonderful Kids sites, site coordinators, and talk to some folks who are actually in the field working to help these kids find homes. We want to raise awareness on older adoptable children. And if you heard our interview with Rita Sorenen, who is the CEO of Dave Thomas Foundation, she talked about unadoptable is unacceptable. And this speaks to the 28,000 children that age out of the system. So mark your calendars, November 17th. Your adoption coach will be doing that show, especially in observance of National Adoption Day. And Amanda, you were telling me, what are you doing for National Adoption Day?
Well, I will be speaking at the Adoptive Parents Committee Annual Conference, which takes place that Sunday in New York. And then over the course of the month, because the country has expanded it to National Adoption Month now, I will be offering a series of three free lunch and learn sessions on how to adopt in the U.S., how to budget for an adoption, and on our favorite topic now, open adoption, throughout the course of the month here in New York.
Great. Okay, good. And if folks want more information about that, they can find that on your website?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So some free seminars and that Amanda is giving during November, which is National Adoption Month.
Right.
So we're back to our topic. I just, you know, we were talking about today open adoption and those three areas of closed, semi-open, and open adoption. The idea that, yes, you do have to do your due diligence with your agency. Not all agencies do open adoptions. Be sure to ask that if you're interested in that before you sign on the dotted line. And then really just got done in this last segment talking about the elephant in the room, that this preconceived myth that people have out there, that years go by and the birth parents come back and say, yeah, I want my child back. So one of the things that you reiterated to us, Amanda, is that finalization is finalization. So it is final. It's irrevocable. There's no way that that can actually happen. But I want to go back to this whole idea of building this relationship. If you do have an open adoption, building this relationship with the birth parent, the birth mom, so you're going down this road, and as you have explained with your experience with Isaac's mom, you're finding there's more trust, you're finding you can share more, and you're doing more visiting and those kinds of things. But what happens if you want to put the brakes on? What, you know, you see some behavior you don't like, or you're seeing something that you don't like? Help us to understand that, because obviously you get down into this relationship, and what if things end up not looking like you want them to?
Sure. And, you know, clearly there's a risk always in relationships of things changing and potentially in a way that is uncomfortable for an adoptive family. So, you know, I think the first thing I would say is that's the reason to tread cautiously from the beginning. And I always encourage people to take it very slowly. Adoptive parents are so eager and excited about what they're doing that they tend to want to do whatever they feel will keep the doors open and keep the process moving, and tend to potentially offer more than they might be comfortable with down the road. So I think the best advice for people is to begin very, very slowly and to build the relationship very slowly over time, because the fact is, once you have opened doors and, for example, shared your address or met each other's families and had exposure that way, it's very difficult to dial it back. You can cease communication as you could with, you know, any other relationship that you're part of, but clearly that's going to be uncomfortable. And there's other people you need to keep in mind here, because you're not only protecting yourself and the child that you've adopted, but you may also have other children, whether biologically or through adoption, that are incorporated in this broader relationship that you need to protect. And I think we all want to think going into this that it can be a positive fairy tale, but the fact is caution is absolutely the best advice. And so one way to do that, again, is to start very slowly with what you offer and to let things build over time, so that you have time as an adoptive family to become comfortable and to build that trust. You may want to increase frequency of communication, for example, but increase it through the agency or the attorney. Don't provide your home address. Don't provide information that can identify you on Facebook and other places like that if you're posting. If at some point you want to share a phone number that is one that, you know, for example, couldn't necessarily be tracked to your home address. So use a cell phone number, or set up a separate email account that is specifically for your communication with the birth family and doesn't tie to any other identifying information in your life.
Right, right. And I actually have an experience of that with one family that I have coached, and that is they set up a separate Facebook account for just them, for just the birth mom and them, so that no one else is sharing that, and it's kind of a closed account. So you can do that, and it's one way of sharing information. But also the adoptive parent's rights to put the brakes on when they need to. Is that right?
Well, it's really, it depends, you know, quite frankly, it really depends on where both families together have taken the relationship. I mean,
right.
if they have no legally binding contract, there's no quote unquote legal right to cut somebody off, but there's no prohibition against it either, just as there wouldn't be with any other relationship in your life. So an adoptive family can absolutely say, and I know of a case, for example, where the birth mother was in an unfortunate situation and she sort of relapsed into that unfortunate situation and became what the adoptive parents considered to be a threat and dangerous and didn't want to expose their adopted child to her, and they did cease communication with her.
Yes. So how are, in open adoptions, how are they negotiated? And you know, you're talking a lot about how this relationship goes on or how it evolves. In the very beginning, we want to be very, very conservative. So do you have any guidelines for how you negotiate this?
Yeah, I mean, luckily there are tremendous professionals helping to facilitate, or I shouldn't use the word facilitate, but to negotiate these relationships. So whether it's a social worker that you're with at an agency or your private attorney, if that's the route you're taking, or your social work team, for example, in a foster adoption, you have professionals who are working with both of you to negotiate this relationship. And since they're working with both families along the way, they have a good sense of what's going to be comfortable, but they will also start by recommending the most conservative approach to either visits or communication. And they will kind of go back and forth between the parties involved and see, but usually you have a good idea even before that point, because a birth mother or birth family will come to the table with what they think they want in the beginning. And as will adoptive families, when they sign up with an agency or an attorney, part of what you need to think through before you enter into that process is, what are we looking for and to what extent are we comfortable having a relationship, if any, with the birth family? And so before you're even matched with a family, you're very likely to have this off the table and decided.
Okay. And there are safeguards in place. I mean, you talk about these professionals. I can tell you that also in coaching families, in raising money for helping them to raise the funds they need for their adoptions, oftentimes I'll get caught into other aspects of the adoption process. While I'm not a social worker, I'm not certified to help folks in adoption, I hear the stories, as you can appreciate. And I really encourage people to trust the professionals who are involved in this, because these people do this every day. They work with these kinds of people every day. So they really know how to do that. But are there safeguards that are in place for each of the parties involved? They know how to do that?
Absolutely. And the biggest safeguard is that there will be a minimal exchange of information, and it will not change until the adoptive parents want it to.
Okay. And you talked about siblings. So there's safeguards for the siblings that are involved, whether they're on the birth family or the adoptive family's regard. So there's all kinds of safeguards that you can put up in terms of all the parties that are involved in the open adoption, right?
Yeah, and yes. And I think the best way to do that is really, you know, quite bluntly, with common sense, but taking the time to think through the relationship before you enter in it, and taking the time to consider, if you do have children, to what extent do you want to expose them to this growing relationship, and vice versa from the birth family's perspective.
So you talked a little bit about going to an attorney or going to an adoption agency. That's really the difference. What is the process in, like, a private adoption or a public adoption?
Well, so if you're going public adoption, and we're generally talking about foster adoption here, it's a little bit different. There are still the same kind of negotiations and safeguards, but the biggest difference is that there is the potential for more requirements more often from the birth family, because if a foster child is still in communication and has a relationship with their birth family, it's very likely that that's going to be a requirement that continues when you adopt that child. And so, you know, as foster parents or foster adoptive parents going into it, that's a requirement for this child. You have to be willing to maintain that ongoing relationship for them and on their behalf. And you might even go beyond that, because in foster adoption, you may also be asked to consider maintaining foster family relationships.
Right, because these are typically older kids. Uh-huh. These are kids that already have relationships that are ongoing. You don't want to just terminate all of those relationships, because what we're getting to is we're, as you said, we're getting to, I loved that co-parenting versus co-loving. We're getting to creating a loving environment, a loving community for, and stable community and environment for these kids, so that they can continue to grow and get their education they need and all of the things that they need in order to be, in order to have a well-being. So very, very important. We're getting ready to take another break. This time always goes by so quickly, Amanda. And again, just a lot of rich information about this whole issue around openness in adoption. And you're just an ideal person, Amanda, to really have a passion for what you're doing. If you're interested in finding out more about Amanda's work, you can go to her website at www.usadopt.com. Don't forget to check out the 3 free lunch and learns that she's going to be holding in November around the celebration for National Adoption Month. National Adoption Day is November 17th, and we are going to be featuring some of the Wendy's Wonderful Kids sites on our show, so be sure to mark your calendar for that. We want to give a special call out to our sponsors, Amanda Grant with U.S. Adopt, Beacon House Adoptions, and America's Christian Credit Union. We're not done. We've got some more information, more good information to learn from Amanda, so do stay with us.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
Beacon House Adoption Services has been providing services to birth and adopting parents since 1989. We offer experience and professionalism throughout your adoption, whether domestic or international. Licensed in multiple states, Beacon House is Hague accredited through COA, accredited by the Russian Federation for International Adoptions and by the Republic of Moldova. Our domestic adoptions are nationwide. Call 225-753-5551. A 501c3 charitable organization.
America's Christian Credit Union believes every child deserves a forever family. Our adoption loan program has helped over 500 children find a loving home. We understand the adoption process and will work with you to find the financial solution that will be best for your family. Find out about our adoption loans on our website at www.americaschristiancu.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-343-6328. Once again, that's 1-800-343-6328 for an adoption loan with America's Christian Credit Union on approved credit and rates subject to change without notice, federally insured by the NCUA.
If you're considering adoption and feeling overwhelmed, you're not alone. U.S. Adopt can help. We provide domestic adoption consulting services that simplify and shorten your path to parenthood. Our new approach improves and accelerates your results, minimizes expenses, and eliminates costly mistakes. Whether you choose to work with an agency or attorney, to take advantage of our free consultation and learn how we can help you, please call U.S. Adopt at 212-710-2763 or visit www.usadopt.com.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. To connect with Kelly or her guests today, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Would you rather send us an email? Please send questions or comments about the show to coach@youradoptioncoachradio.com. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. Thanks, everybody, for staying with us today. We're back with Amanda Grant, who is with U.S. Adopt. Amanda is talking about one of her many passions, but her passion around openness in adoption, giving us some really wonderful tips and information about how to have a successful open adoption and how to really manage that whole process and negotiate a really great open adoption process. And one of the questions that I was asking Amanda during the break was just this whole idea of, we've talked before on the show about how the internet has really changed domestic adoption. I mean, literally, you know, you're a parent, you're a prospective parent, you want to get on the internet and you want to put your profile up, and boom, you've got a birth that's communicating with you right away. Personally, that scares me to death to think that, you know, you're just having this communication, because there's a number of things that you could say that would be interpreted incorrectly, and you don't really know what you're, you know, what you're negotiating. So tell us a little bit about that. What is your perception of that, and guide us in this process?
Well, first of all, it's not for everybody, which is why some people choose, that's the reason for some people to choose working with an agency versus an attorney, because you're not personally screening birth families. But the ability to have that much communication up front and be that involved with the process can be very appealing for some people and the right decision. Nonetheless, it certainly makes people a little nervous and anxious and excited and worried about how to communicate and what to say and what not to say. Typically, when people work with an attorney and are doing their own advertising and marketing and receiving communication directly from inquiring birth families, they set up what's known as the bat phone. They typically have a cell phone that they're walking around with a dedicated number specifically for call-ins. As you mentioned, they may have a website dedicated solely for communication with birth families as well. But there's a lot that people can do to sort of be prepared for those initial conversations. If you're working with an attorney and you're screening birth family calls in, there are a lot of things that you can say to get the conversation going. And it sounds silly, but small talk is actually one of the best ways to get the conversation going, because it's important to remember these birth mothers or birth families are often in a crisis situation.
Right,
they're coming from a position of having very little support, and they very much want the approval of the adoptive family. So it's important to give them time to talk, to ask them questions that are acceptable. For example, how are you feeling? Do you have support? What are your plans for after the baby is born? It's not okay to say things like, well, where's the birth father and how did you get pregnant? And these sound like common sense, but when people are nervous and anxious, it can be very easy to say the wrong thing. So often I would encourage people to carry around a note card that has the initial questions they're going to ask. And importantly, to remember, the first phone call will hopefully only be the first phone call, so there will be time to gather other information with the assistance of your adoption professionals.
Right, right. And it's an emotional decision. It's an emotional experience for both the adoptive, prospective adoptive families, but also for the birth parents or the birth mom. It's a highly emotional experience. So are there, if you're not using an agency and you are using an attorney, do attorneys typically, will they offer kind of some guidelines for this, or is there a place that folks can find these particular types of guidelines that you're talking about?
Many attorneys do. I mean, every attorney is different, but most of them are very good at coaching adoptive families on how to receive these calls, what to ask, how to move the conversation, hopefully, to the next conversation, which really is the goal if you're both initially inclined to learn more about each other. And they are very active and positive about coaching the families that they're working with. So people are typically not on their own doing this unless they're doing all of their advertising on their own without the assistance of an adoption professional, which I don't think anyone would recommend these days.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a good idea at all. And also, do you talk about money? I mean, is that one of the conversations, or is that guided by... Really, is that guided
money,
by...
Money would be money? Taboo for the first conversation.
Right,
and
it, right.
In all cases, would be recommended, I think, by everyone, that you leave that to your adoption professional. Because it's not about the money in particular, not in that first phone call. Birth parents, whether you're going through an agency or an attorney, are not meant to be profiting from this experience, and the majority of them come to make this decision based not on money but based on the best interests of the child and what they are capable or not capable of doing as parents for the child going forward. So money definitely would not be something to talk about in that first conversation and best left to your attorney or agency.
Right. Well, and when we talk about the anxiety possibly of a birth mom, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, there are lots of situations where she's wanting to know how her expenses are going to get covered. I mean, there's probably a lot of anxiety from her end about that, as with there's a lot of anxiety from the adoptive families about, you know, we all know that adoption is expensive, $35,000 to $55,000. So it is expensive. So it is the discussion. Obviously, you have to get to that, but as you're suggesting, it's never on the first, or maybe even you allow your adoption professional to take care of that particular discussion. Give us one or two tips. Those are tips for the phone conversation. Give us, before we have to go here today, one or two tips on the first meeting. What kinds of things do we need to think about?
The best tip I can give is be yourself, and remember that the birth mother or birth family are even more anxious than you are about this first meeting. They very much want you to like them. As I've said, they are coming from a place of often fear and crisis and little support, whereas you, an adoptive family, are coming with joy and hope. It might seem awkward, but it's a good idea to make yourself comfortable sharing with them how excited you are about the prospect of parenting and of adopting. They want to hear that, as much as people might think they might not. It comforts them to know that you are really positive and excited about this opportunity and that you care about them as human beings. So the best thing you can do is show them genuine interest in their well-being when you first meet them.
And let me give a shout out. We're getting ready to speak to Adam Pertman in a few weeks. Adam was the author of Adoption Nation, and I would recommend that book to anyone who is thinking about a domestic adoption. He really has a great way of discussing just this type of thing, the secrecy, all just how the adoption community has changed. And you're so right about really acknowledging them as a human being and the fact that this is a very difficult decision that they have come to. So, well, thank you so much, Amanda. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Appreciate so much all of this valuable information. Again, if you want to learn more about Amanda and her work, you can go to www.usadopt.com. Amanda's process and her resources to help people go through the process more quickly and confidently while also reducing risk and costs are just very, very valuable. And we're so grateful that this is your passion and you're sharing it with all of us today. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Kelly.
Yes. Now, before we go, we want to just give our financial tip from America's Christian Credit Union. Today, the financial tip is to keep the currency of the nation you are adopting from close at hand. America's Christian Credit Union is here to provide you financial resources to Christians, including adoption loans. They are the largest adoption lender in the nation. I'm so, so impressed with all of the resources that they have that are available to prospective adoptive parents. So if you want to find out about some of their products, you can go to www.americaschristiancu.com. Again, that website is www.americaschristiancu.com. I want to thank again our guest, Amanda Grant, for being with us today. Thank you, Amanda, not only for being on the show, but also for sponsoring the show and our other sponsors, Beacon House Adoption and America's Christian Credit Union. What a great show. If you liked what you heard today, if you have suggestions or you'd like to have a story that you would like to share with us, you can reach me at coach@youradoptioncoachradio.com or find my host webpage at voiceamerica.com. Thanks again for joining us. Stay tuned next week for our show at 12 o'clock Pacific, 2 o'clock Central, and 3 o'clock Eastern. In the meantime, have a great week.
We hope today's program gave you some inspiration as well as information about adoption. Please tune in next Saturday at 12 noon Pacific Time and 3 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Your Adoption Coach on the Voice America Variety Channel. Thank you again for listening.